This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is Helene Cooper, Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporter and immigrant from Liberia. Listeners might be familiar with her memoir, The House at Sugar Beach. Her newest book is Madam President, The Extraordinary Journey of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
If I'm looking at a map of Africa, where would I find Liberia?
Liberia is on the west coast of Africa. It's between Ivory Coast, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. It's on the water on the Atlantic Ocean with beautiful beaches if you're looking for a travel destination.
Your book is a biography of Africa's first female president and 2011 Nobel Prize winner. Why her? Why now?
Well, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf was elected president in 2005 on the backs of a women's movement in Liberia that swept through the country right after it came out of a horrific, almost two-decade-long civil war. These women saw their children kidnapped. They were raped. The percentage of rape in the country was 70%. It really was a nightmare-type scenario, and they got fed up and pushed in after Charles Taylor, who I'm sure you know about, was famously convicted of war crimes for his work in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and in the Ivory Coast, was removed from power. The country had democratic elections, and to the shock of the world, you know, the women flooded to the polls and put a 67-year-old grandma in charge. I'm from Liberia myself. I grew up there. And I live now in the U.S. I'm an American citizen. But I watched these elections from here, which is sort of amazement. And I knew at the time that I wanted to go back home to write about it.
She was elected because 80% of Liberian women voted for her, as you report in your book. How did they get out the vote?
It was a real guerrilla type of campaign. It took grassroots to new levels. I mean, they really did a lot on mobilizing women to register to vote, going up into her supporters, were going up into villages, going into markets, sending babysitters to the markets. And then once the campaign started in real, she was running. You had this 67-year-old Harvard educated global bureaucrat with experience coming out of her pores going up against a young professional football player. And just as, you know, a lot of the men fell in behind the football player, the women who were really fed up with war and thought that a woman would not take the country back to war fell in line behind Ellen. And it really became sort of a gender war. And it was one that the women won. They were willing to use all sorts of techniques, both clean and dirty, to play in the same ball field with the men, and they were successful.
Have Liberians been happy with her as president?
By and large, yeah, but she gets a lot of criticism. And that's in a part of that. The reason for that is because there's been freedom of speech and freedom of the press in Liberia for the first time in its history. So people are now suddenly free to criticize. She's very much, if you can remember how the tone of the political discourse in the second term of Barack Obama's campaign, that's sort of what you get in Liberia now. She's in her second term. She's going to be stepping down at the end of this year, handled it.
Right.
It was an intense time for me because you were hearing, I mean, the people in the United States were reacting to Ebola was hysterical. I mean, you turn on CNN or Fox News and it was this, the volume was insane. And then you go back to Liberia and you know, the volume was insane in a place that didn't have the U.S., a place that didn't have much of a chance of people catching Ebola. And then I went to Liberia where the pandemic was raging in full. You know, you're at ground zero and people seem to be dealing with it. They're very resilient people, Liberians are. They've gone through many wars in the past, including the Civil War. They've become accustomed to living with demons. And for them, in a lot of ways, Ebola was just another one that they knew they would get through. It was emotional, though, because you have people dying around you all the time. I remember one of the first days I got there, I was at an Ebola treatment unit when this ambulance brought in a 9-year-old boy, and they had him step aside, you know, they're asking him questions about, you know, why he started vomiting, and everybody in his house had died, and he's answering their questions, looking really afraid. And I still remember the look on his face, and I'm standing away from him so that, you know, he can't, you know, I'm worried about the contagion, but he was just a little kid. He was a 9-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, as a reporter, I'm used to covering war and that kind of stuff, but I'm not used to seeing children, you know, who are confronting death. And that was really, really a hard thing to cover, but it also brings it home for you just what people all over the world go through that in many ways we're protected from in the U.S. Working on the book in the middle of the Ebola epidemic, I really thought, okay, so it's going to be interesting how we come out of this, and am I going to have to change everything that I write about in this book? How will it affect the book? And in the end, it just added, you know, another layer.
You came to the U.S. as an immigrant, you said yourself, when you were a teenager, and it was here that you experienced racism for the first time. Is that true?
Well, it was here that I was first that's true. I experienced racism in Liberia, but, you know, it was more what the people who I knew were doing to other people than what was being done to me. So, yes, that is true. I was in college, and I had a white roommate in my freshman year who then moved out because she didn't want a room with a black student.
Oh. Though you're the Times correspondent at the Pentagon now, you were in the White House press corps during the Obama years. Back then, would you have ever anticipated a travel ban on immigrants, certain immigrants, would be issued by the next president?
No.
You recently wrote a piece in the Times about your own refugee experience.
Yeah, I did. It was weird because I was at the Pentagon and I had to do the story when the first travel ban was put in place. And I was, you know, as a reporter, you turn off all of the emotion when you're working on a story. But it was very hard for me to write a story about us shutting our doors to refugees and not be aware of the fact that I myself was a refugee. And I remember driving home that night from the Pentagon, and my stomach was really churning, and I felt very emotional about this story. And then reading the next day as in the New York Times coverage about all of the people who had been, you know, taken off planes and stopped at the airports. And I remember there was a paragraph about an Iranian woman an Iranian family who were hauled off a plane right after the ban went into effect. And that really struck me. I remember very well when my mom and my sister and I were running away from Liberia in 1980 and sitting on the plane on the tarmac, scared that soldiers were going to come and pull us off. And I remember very well how afraid I was, how brave I thought my mom was being, and I couldn't help but connect that to this Iranian family that was pulled off the plane. The similarities, I think, were very glaring to me.
What would you like readers to take from this book, Madam President?
I hope they take away sort of an idea of the resilience strength of the Liberian women, an understanding of what they accomplish, taking political control and taking it into their own hands. I hope they learn a lot more about my country. It's such an interesting place. There's so many quirks to it. I hope that people walk away with more of an understanding of Liberia and more of an appreciation of African women in general and just all that they're able to endure and thrive despite all of that they have to endure. And then I hope it's a good read.
Well, thank you. My guest is Helene Cooper, author of Madam President, published by Simon & Schuster. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.
Thanks, Diana.